Welcome to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Today, I have a special bonus episode with Ruth McIver. Now, if you tune in regularly to the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast, you'll know that we broadcast from the studios of 2SER in Sydney and that we love exploring new Australian writing. And often we will have two-parters where an interview was so fantastic but kind of long, so it's good to have it in manageable chunks. This is different though. Ruth and I had an absolutely fantastic chat about her new novel, I Shot the Devil. Now, this is a thriller. It has a twist. There is a mystery. And so I don't want to give you too many spoilers, but Ruth and I had just an incredible preamble and then a little bit of afterward where we talked about things in the novel that can only be considered heavy spoilers. If you have read I Shot the Devil or if you are prepared for heavy spoilers and want to hear discussions of cats as protagonists, heavy metal iconography, and just way more discussion of Axl Rose than you thought you were signing up for, well then join me as we discover a special heavy spoiler outtake from Ruth McIver's I Shot the Devil. Hey, thanks so much as well. Just I've thoroughly enjoyed I Shot the Devil. I'm just gonna break the ice on the conversation with something that just absolutely does not fit into the interview. But on a personal note,
okay.
I am just so very, very thankful that you didn't kill Mister. Like,
that would never happen. I can't watch anything. I feel like there should be a trigger warning for me as like an animal lover, like especially a cat, or a dog, actually anything. Because I just read a book recently and a sheep died, and I was just devastated. But never would I kill a cat. Never, not once.
It was this really strange moment where it felt like that moment where Erin sort of asks, and I was like, have you made a conscious decision to kill her dad over her cat? and that kind of got me thinking back to, I'm like, were you consciously foreshadowing the possibility of harm to Mister, or is that just me? Because I've got two cats and I'm just like, oh my God.
It's I think like because also with like Mona and the dogs and stuff, and it's like that thing where like that's your family and the unconditional love of the pet. And so it's like that's the one thing that could hurt her. So yeah, it was like dangling the fear, but never, I would never. And it's also my worst fear. And I think that I wrote a short story once about this. When I first got Stevie, my cat, I got this series of really strange texts.
Oh.
And yeah, it was really odd. And at the
same time, from Craig Kelly. We're all getting those ones from Craig Kelly.
I just finally got one. Now I feel like I'm part of things. I'd heard this story also at the same time of somebody who'd gotten their pets tags engraved. Mm. And then after that, they started getting stalked by the engraver. And I was like, fuck, that is such an insane story, right? Mm. So I wrote a short story about it. But at that time, I got these like weird texts that just didn't make any sense. And they were things like, your meat is off. And like, your front door is open or whatever. And it was like, they're obviously sending it to the wrong phone. But I was like, yeah, it was like the attack of the pet or like that fear that someone could take the thing that you love the most. And it's like when people can see your vulnerability, like when you're posting about your pet or that sort of thing, I always have that fear like that something like that could happen. And that's like the ultimate wickedness, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think in my head, just as an antidote to the possibility, because until it didn't happen in my head, it was always a possibility. I started like trying to compose a story where I figured out like how my cats would save me if there was an intruder. And then I'm like, they actually hide under the doona. Like they hide under the doona when friends visit. Like I just,
but you never know, like, as in like, even if you have a timid cat, cats can be really protective. And like, somebody raised their voice to me once and Stevie fully just slept like that with her paw, like no claws, but just like slapped. And it was like, I was like, whoa, like you're capable, you know, who knows? And I've read a true crime story where that actually happened, where the cat attacked the attacker. So maybe they know that you're not really in danger from those people.
Okay.
I guess you could, yeah. I think you can count on them.
I know I know that mine know where their food drawer is, and every morning they're at me for their food, and then they'll go to their food drawer. So maybe if the intruder went straight to their food drawer. I absolutely love that in my notes for the interview proper, I've got a reminder to myself to put a content warning on this. And so far the interview has been, how will my cat save me in a true crime situation?
Yes, that's really very good. And I have answers for that. So that I'm glad that you asked that very important question.
This is...
But yeah, like I'm really glad that you asked that too, because I honestly really think there's got to be a content warning for like books and movies where animals get harmed. It just, it's to me, it's like, the, like, or, I mean, obviously children, that's the other one, but it's, and most like people I think feel the same way.
Mm. Well, when I was doing it, I was actually writing just a little intro to the book, and I was more thinking about the, like the whole satanic angle. And I'm like, oh, one of my show goes to air twice across the week. And I'm like, one is in breakfast time. Like, I don't know if people like their Satanism after morning tea. I don't know. It's.
I reckon people are really hungry for stuff like satanic stuff, to be honest. Like I think that it's, you'd be surprised how many people are really into it. Like they're really like curious. And I think it has that kind of like gleeful taboo sort of thing. But yeah, I think I probably should be more conscious of that too, just in terms of talking. Not many people have asked me much about the trauma aspects. There's been a little bit of that, but more, I got to have a live conversation in Castlemaine, which was like fucking the best, you know, like
awesome.
So nice. I got to have one live thing. And we did talk about that on, you know, in that conversation, but yeah, I often feel like I should be conscious of that too. So
I just had a sudden moment where I was scanning my notes whether I had actually popped anything in, because I do also vividly recall over the sort of the week or so that I was reading, thinking back to like being a kid and when you would have like, you know, metal bands would really heavily broadcast that iconography, and it never felt serious. Like it always, before I knew what a marketing gimmick was, like having, I forget which band it was, someone like Megadeth, they would have like their it was recognizably them because of the hair and the bandanas, but it was like kind of a dripping flesh skull face. I'm like,
oh yeah,
it doesn't feel real. Like the idea that someone could take that seriously feels strange.
But even like Guns N' Roses, like I think it was like maybe it was Civil War. Do you know the cover that I'm talking about? Like that, and it's like a kind of like depiction of a rape. And I remember
I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a woman. It was like a very sexualized image of someone who's kind of like been violated, but like skelly, you know, that metal style sort of thing. But yeah, like I remember kind of thinking at the time, it was all kind of the heaviness and significance was lost on me as a kid, you know, because I didn't really fully understand that. But I think it's the cartoonish element of it that, you know, it's like a trope.
Yep.
So that it's like, it's not real, it's pretend. Yeah. And funnily enough, my brother is a really great drawer, and he used to draw all of those like metal covers, like recreate them in his like drawing style at home, like so family pictures would be like, you
know. That's incredible.
Yeah, but it didn't go down well at Catholic school when he did the priest with the Eucharist.
I went to a Catholic school too, and I can well understand. They notoriously just no sense of humor.
No, and just a real heavy policing of like content at that time. Like I really feel like the more that I think about it, I think that my school, and in fact, I kind of know this now, there was like a very weird, useful undercurrent of kind of like a bit of a Christian cultiness to it too. Because it was always like a bloody prayer meeting every second night. It was like every bit of your life had to be contained within this religious kind of envelope. And it was like, you know, what time do you go to bed? What are you watching on TV? Like, you know, what's your family and home life like? And then you start displaying those signs of like aberrance, and, you know, it's flagged. So, you know, we had to like go to counseling because of that picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was interrogated in a room, like, with my brother's teacher. And, like, he's 4 years older than me. So it's, like, in year two, I think. Mm. Like, asking me questions about my, you know, my viewing habits, like, what was going on at home, like, how I felt about God.
Oh, God.
And the way that I felt about God was, like, I was, like, hyper-religious, but I would go and steal everything. And I would also go to the lost property room and steal all this shit. And then I would go and pray and, like,
I mean, if you look at, you know, a lot of the centers of Catholicism in Europe, stealing everything is not discordant with the broader philosophy. Like, there's a reason those cathedrals are like the oldest buildings. They just nicked everything off everyone else to build them.
It was a really bad, like, I mean, I'm shocked when I think about it. Like, I remember my mom coming home and she was like, "What's that under your jumper?" And I was like, she's like, "Is that a basketball? Where did you get that?" I was like, "My friend gave it to me." She's always coming home with stuff that wasn't mine, you know? Mm. And it was like, but it was like this really discreet understanding of sin and confession. Like, it was like, I have to sin. Also, because I think, like, I was really aware when we did our reconciliation that I didn't really have any sins. Like, because they would be like, "What did you do?" And you're like, "I was mean to my mom," or "I did this." Like, what the hell's a two, you know, a year two gonna confess to? So, done nothing.
Just to clarify, you had FOMO about confession.
Yes. Yeah, I did. It was like, oh, I haven't sinned. So, like, I better create some sins.
Oh, my God.
So.
Hey, should I ask you some questions about your amazing book?
Yes. Yep.
That was Ruth and I discussing her book, I Shot the Devil, and more appropriately, everyone's favorite character in any book, the cat. Now, if you want to find out a little bit about what happened next, the interview proper, well, that was part one of this two-part on Ruth MacIver's I Shot the Devil. But if you've already caught that, it will be the immediately preceding interview in the podcast. If you've already heard my interview with Ruth, you might want to know what happens after we close out the interview. And you will be very surprised. It involves theories, spoilers, and again, more Axl Rose. A couple of things. Again, I always have these things that I'm like, that doesn't really fit in the interview. But a couple of times when we've been talking, I just kept thinking back to, did you ever watch Spicks and Specks? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes. Incredible. So watching an old episode just on the weekend gone, do you remember the quiz part, the musician or serial killer contest?
No.
Oh, okay. No. So one of the little segments would be musician or serial killer, and they'd just pop up a black and white photo, and whoever's turn it was had to guess, is it a musician or a serial killer?
That's so good. I can't remember that, but, like, when you think about it, if you saw a picture of Richard Ramirez, for example, you could, until you saw his teeth, I think, you could probably say musician. And not serial killer.
Well, I mean, if you want to relive, a lot of them are on YouTube. That's where I was watching it. But so
I've got to do that.
Yeah, it was the absolute last one in this, and this was, oh, that's right. This was the very first episode of Spicks and Specks that I realized I'd never seen. And so they did the serial killers were all the big ones, like the Yorkshire Ripper and was it Jeffrey Dahmer? But anyway, the very last picture pops up. And I think it was Miff's team, and they're like, and they just went, oh, it's got to be a serial killer. And this coming back to our conversation about metal earlier, it was a short-haired, slightly older, so probably like early 2000s, Axl Rose.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and I can actually, I mean, when you think of the content in Guns N' Roses, like how much, like, murder, like spousal murder and stuff like that is in those songs. Like I and also, like, I'm pretty sure didn't he get charged for domestic abuse also and stuff
I feel like that's a thing. Yeah.
It's really, really difficult for me because as a little girl, I grew up with the biggest crush on Axl Rose. Like I loved him, you know, I mean, like pretty much everyone else. And, you know, he had that vulnerability to him too, like, and, you know, a fragility, that was something that was really compelling about him too. And, yeah, just seeing his evolution into what he became. So I saw someone's picture of him at a concert and I was like, who the fuck is that? And then I was like, oh, it's Axl Rose. Jesus.
So like an overinflated balloon.
Oh, and with cornrows. Like,
oh, yeah,
that was
right.
Like, oh, a really bad episode in his hair life anyway. But like, I mean, there was something about him, you know, that had that vulnerability. And I think a lot of those kind of like really wicked men do have that. So it's like that, it invites mothering or maternity. Like, it's like you want to protect them.
Mm, yep, yep. The other, sorry, so you were talking about read along and people's sort of ideas and theories. I at one point, I knew that there was going to be some sort of betrayal, that there would be someone in Aaron's life that wasn't quite what they seem. And I didn't actually have it pegged as Ox. I was like, I thought you were going to have her editor was Denise.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. That's an interesting one. I had to have one safe person and I chose the mother figure. It was hard for me to do that with Ox. Like, I think the editors pushed back because they wanted to have a father figure that was like not, yeah. It was interesting. Very interesting also with Erin too. Like, people really didn't like her during the editorial process. Like, what, make her less like, don't make her so weirdly into danger and like, you know, why is she running into these like terrible situations? And I was like, because she doesn't have a danger like alert system and there's something wrong with her. Like, also, like, she's actually not really neurotypical and, like, this is – it's more complex, but it's, like, I think the way that it was being edited, the investment and the way that they wanted it to appeal to readers was like that.
Wow. So it's like, that's kind of bullshit. I mean, like, nobody would question why a Jason Bourne character was running into danger.
It's like a female's – the need for the female to be more relatable and – a need for there to be more like good male characters and like some soft, cuddly sort of things. To be honest, like, I'm surprised I got away with as much noir as I did. Like, and I think it was like, it was really weird because I was like, I felt super dark as I was writing the last part of the book. It was like a really dark and intense kind of experience, and then I came out of it and felt like heaps better. But I think that was kind of coloring the way things went. But
it was actually super cool the way you stuck the landing, because the way the action kind of ramped up very quick, and like you sort of piled violence on violence. I felt like, in a sense, that could have not worked, because
I felt that and I don't know that everyone's going to love that either. But I am really a big kind of like Greek tragedy kind of person. And that's what happens. It's like, you know, it's like the bodies pile up. But yeah, like, I do feel a little bit like it's almost like I just keep pushing and seeing what I can get away with. Mm. And then, but you know, it's sort of like, for me, ultimately, yes, everybody wants good reviews, critically speaking, but for me, what I'm really interested in is readers like digging it. Do you know what I mean? If that entertains and it's credulous, that's what I want, because, you know, that's, I actually finally wrote a book that I wanted to read.
Aww.
Which is like, no, do you know what I mean? I was like, I want to write a book. It's like, I just was like, it's got to be, because I'm sick of reading things that don't appeal to my incredibly niche taste.
Very good. Yeah, no, that's what you need. And I mean, like, they say the sophomore album is, you know, the hard one. So you could, I mean, just throwing it out there. I know that, say, like, do you know Chrissy Neen?
Yeah.
So you know her book Wintering?
Yeah.
So you know the story with that is she wrote that while she was supposed to be writing something else.
Yeah.
I remember, I think she told me that in an interview, and it was just kind of like, yeah, it was just like, this was, I was supposed to be working on something else and I couldn't handle it, so I wrote this. You could write the story about, you know, the hero cat saving the owner as a novel, and then come back to you. And then just, that can be your sophomore, that's your sophomore album.
Such a good idea.
Cool. That's awesome. Yeah. Erin, sorry, I called you Erin. Sorry, Ruth.
Don't worry, my mum thinks it's me too. So,
well, yeah. I just sort of started to wonder, like, you know, are you identifying at all in the book? Because I mean, like, you've talked about your brother in the conversation. I mean, like, if we had to map you onto two of the characters, it probably wouldn't be the most flattering of mapping, because
it's definitely not. I mean, I definitely would be Erin and Aisling together for sure. it's a terrible. And then I realized after I wrote the book, I was like, "Fuck, my cousin's named Aisling." But you know, I have like 100 cousins because I'm Irish. And then I was like, "I hope she doesn't get mad." Like, but yeah, like definitely, it's you know. But at the same time, like I'm, it's probably, you know, it's all kind of like a bit hyperbolic, like, and also like so not an indicator of my lifestyle. For example, like I'm pretty much have a drink every 3 months. I'm a vegan. I'm like, you know, don't eat. I'm a health food fanatic, you know, like it's like, I can't drive a car. So yeah, it's definitely also not me.
You appear to be wearing a red cardigan, which is just too much pop for Erin as well.
I know, too much color. Yeah. But definitely my agent asked me to stop taking such gothic photos. He's like, "No ravens on your shoulder, Ruth."
Oh my goodness. That is hilarious. Ruth, this has just been such a great chat as well as a great interview. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah. Thank you.
And
thank you so much. And that was like a really considered, thoughtful and interesting conversation about the book. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, you are most welcome. You're most welcome. That's it for this special follow-up on my conversation with Ruth McIver. Ruth's new novel is I Shot the Devil. It's out now from Hachette. Great Conversations is recorded on the lands of the Darug and Gunungurra people. The show is produced and presented by Andrew Popel. You can stay in touch. Please let me know what you're thinking of the show. Let me know if you've read I Shot the Devil and you appreciated some of the extra perspectives we brought today. You'll find Final Draft on social media at FinalDraft2SER. And if you're not subscribed in your podcast app, click subscribe. It means you'll get a new conversation every week. I'm Andrew Popel. I will be back next week with more great conversations from Final Draft. Till then, happy reading. Bye now.